The frescoes that grace the vast and vaulted ceiling of the Sistine Chapel are among the greatest masterpieces in the world. But behind all that floating beauty is a story filled with suffering, sacrifice, and, yes, inspired artistry. According to a new book, Michelangelo's painting of the Sistine Chapel was not a labor of love. In 1508, Pope Julius II commissioned the 33-year-old Michelangelo to paint the ceiling, based on the artist's growing reputation as a sculptor. But Ross King, the author of Michelangelo and the Pope's Ceiling, explains that Michelangelo, who was famously temperamental, tried without success to dodge the assignment. King says Michelangelo suspected that enemies in Rome were setting him up for failure because he had little experience as a painter and even less working in the complicated technique of fresco.
The word fresco means fresh, and what that alludes to is the fact that you would paint on fresh plaster and you would paint in situ, in other words, on the wall or on the vault, which created its own problems. The major problem, though, was this fact that you had to paint while the plaster was still wet. And so you had maybe 8 or 12 hours on a good day to do a little patch of plaster that that the plasterer spread for you. And so there were all sorts of logistical problems. And so when Michelangelo was suddenly confronted with 12,000 square feet of fresco, a medium that he really hadn't worked on in about 20 years, I think he had very good reason to be daunted.
And 12,000 square feet, we're not talking about a flat surface.
Exactly. That was the other great difficulty of it. He was going to be painting on the ceiling of a chapel. He was going to have to somehow erect a scaffold to take him some 60 feet off the ground. It's a very difficult surface to paint because it's interrupted at a number of points by windows. There are a number of windows in the walls, and they have lunettes and spandrels over them. The lunettes are the sort of semicircular space above the window. The lunette is a kind of projecting architectural feature that then carries the window space into the vault itself. So what Michelangelo had to do was not only sort of torture himself physically by twisting his body around, reaching overhead, and so forth, in order to cover the vault, he had to come up with a scheme that could unify these very disparate architectural elements of the vault.
In your book, you debunk one of the great myths about painting the Sistine Chapel, the notion that Michelangelo painted while he was lying on his back.
That's a misconception that came up quite soon after his death. There is a biography written of him actually during his own lifetime. It was written in Latin, and it said that he lay resupinus when he painted, which should have been translated as bent backwards, which if you've ever painted the ceiling of your living room or a bedroom, you know that you have to lean backwards in order to do it. And that's all that this man, Paolo Giovio, the biographer, meant. However, it ultimately came to be translated in many languages as on his back, which then ultimately produced the image of Charlton Heston lying on his back in the agony and the ecstasy and having paint dripping onto his face and so forth. But it's, if you think about it, it's completely, why would Michelangelo ever have designed a scaffold that left him a clearance of about 3 feet so that he was forced to lie on his back in order to paint? I think other evidence very strongly suggests that he actually created a very commodious and convenient scaffold for himself and for his team of assistants who were able to stand on the platforms and reach up. They probably had a clearance of 6 or 7 feet.
If you actually have this in front of you, I would love for you to read a letter that Michelangelo wrote to a friend describing how difficult this work was.
This was a letter he wrote to a friend named Giovanni da Pistoia, and he put it in the form of a poem. And he's exaggerating, I'm sure, the difficulties that he had while painting. But I think it also says something about the physical infirmities he did suffer at this time. He writes to Giovanni, "I've got myself a goiter from this strain, as water gives the cats in Lombardy, or maybe it is in some other country. My belly's pushed by force beneath my chin, my beard towards heaven. I feel the back of my brain upon my neck. I grow the breast of a harpy. My brush above my face continually makes it a splendid floor by dripping down. My loins have penetrated to my paunch, my rump's a crupper as a counterweight, and pointless the unseeing steps I go. In front of me, my skin is being stretched, while it folds up behind and forms a knot, and I'm bending like a Syrian bow.
One of the amazing things about his work is the detail. And you describe in the book that the figures have muscles that physicians have yet to find names for. They're just so finely drawn.
That's right. His study of the human body was so exhaustive through observation of his models, but also anatomy that he'd been involved in for up to 10 years before he began work in the Sistine Chapel, made it so that he really was one of the foremost anatomists and experts on the physical structure of the human body in the early 1500s. And for many centuries after his death, it was believed that he actually invented physical structures, muscles, that didn't actually exist. But it's been found in the last 20, 30, 40 years that these muscles do in fact exist, and yet they haven't actually given them names yet.
You get the sense that he grumbled his way through this, feeling that he was underappreciated, underpaid. Did he ultimately leave with a sense of satisfaction, feeling that this was a job well done?
Not really. I mean, it was such an unpleasant experience for him. I think he couldn't wait to be finished it. I think he knew that he was going to succeed at it ultimately, and he wanted it to be celebrated and to have its due respect. But he was someone who was never really happy. He was quite a melancholy figure. What's interesting is that a number of years later, he came to paint another wall in the Sistine Chapel, the altar wall, with the fresco of the Last Judgment. And in order to do that, he had to destroy part of the fresco that he'd painted between 1508 and 1512. And it seems he had absolutely no compunction about doing that.
Before his death, did he have any sense of the legacy that he created, of the myth that would live on for centuries?
I think he did. He was a self-publicist, one of the very first self-publicists. And I think he was very determined to create not only these great works of art, but also create the climate in which they would be accepted and celebrated. It's almost as if Michelangelo was creating his own myth. He was sort of present at the creation of his myth. Few artists in history have ever been as concerned about the imprint they would leave on history as Michelangelo was.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Sure, well, thank you.
Ross King is author of Michelangelo and the Pope's Ceiling.